Ladies, I hate to ask you to do this, but we do need to get started because we're a little backed up from Hillary's beautiful presentation. I know, everybody, this was not my idea to become, you know, in between the food and the wine. And after Hillary, this would not have been my choice. So bear with me. How about, yeah, I'll just start telling jokes. I mean, in my other life, I probably would have been a stand-up comedian. I'm Theo Schwabacher, and I'm pleased that everybody's here eating and drinking, and we've had a long day today, so I appreciate you being here with all the Morgan Stanley women. If we could have the ladies stand up for a second, and I'm very pleased that all the Morgan Stanley women are here today, so thank you. And they will be here afterwards. Obviously, the food and alcohol that you are now imbibing are because Morgan Stanley wants you to enjoy that with us. They'll be around to answer questions. We've got about 20 minutes of a presentation, and then I will bring up the other ladies and we'll actually do Q&A. So as you're drinking, write down some questions that you might want answered, some hot topics, because we are definitely a force to be reckoned with. I think you've got a really good sense of that with Hillary Clinton a few minutes ago. And, you know, having grown up in this business, I'll give you a quick anecdote. I started in this business, and I'm going to date myself, which is really awful, 1981. So now you know how old I am. And I had a background in journalism. There were no women in the business. I started on the trading desk, and, you know, they were really cute. They patted me on the head, and they said, oh, you're a woman? What do you want to be in this business for? It's for the boys. I grew up with four older brothers, and I realized that I didn't know the difference between boys and girls. I just thought we all got to play together in the sand pit. And, of course, you know, that's what we're all still learning to do. And there are some differences, but I think, you know, one of the important things that we do is that we find mentors. And mentors can be men or women. But if you can find a female mentor, she will help you, unlike what Madeleine Albright said earlier in Hillary's quote. So I just want to thank the many women that are behind the ongoing movement at Morgan Stanley, where we're becoming much more diversified. Wall Street, as you know, has not always been the most friendly place in the world for women to work, but I can tell you those times are finally changing, which is a really positive thing. So Marilyn Brooker, who's head of the urban markets in New York, was the person that was responsible for this, along with Shannon Guild, who's here. Where are you, Shannon? Wave your hand. Yay, Shannon! And, you know, this whole diversity element is really, really important. I work with women corporate directors putting women on public companies, and I can tell you that's my nonprofit job because it's an important job. And after a while, you get tired of the glass ceiling. You want to come down through the ceiling and make sure that women are represented on all levels. And I think that we're really on to a change that's coming. And as a feminist and having been a feminist for years, you know, that word's so strong, but it does mean something. It means that you ladies get to step up. And on our shoulders, with us, everybody working together. And I think it'll make a huge difference going forward. The one thing I have to say, though, and one of the reasons I got into this business and have been here for so long, is if you want real freedom, you need to be in control of your money. And you need to know how to make it work well for you and wisely. So, you know, as part of this world, we are the dominant sex, believe it or not. 50.6% of the world population are women. We control one-third of all investable assets worldwide, not just in the United States. It's a little higher in the United States. 45% of Americans are millionaires. Did you know that? Most people didn't. 48% of estates with more than 5 million are controlled by women, compared with 35% controlled by men. So think about, if you really put your money where your mouth is, what that can do. Women earn less. I think it's about 80 cents, we said that earlier today, as opposed to 77 cents. It depends on the industry. And I think particularly now with all the due diligence that's out there and the information that you guys are sharing, that's going to change. And, of course, women are more likely to leave and re-enter the workforce, which is where some of the problems bump into. I met one of my major idols last night, who was Gail Sheehy, of course, who wrote Passages. And one of the things that was in one of her works was that Change is not only possible and predictable, but to deny them is to be an accomplice of one's own vegetation. So my job today is to make sure you guys are not potted plants. We are not going to be vegetables. We're going to be active in putting your money to work and being smart about your money. It's really, really important. And we have a lot of responsibilities. We're used to being able to take care of multiple things simultaneously, our children, our spouse, our parents, our grandchildren. But don't forget yourself, okay? I think that comment came out earlier today. You're on a plane, it's about to crash, what's the first thing you do? You put your own oxygen on first. You've got to be the first line of defense, so you've got to take care of yourself, physically, mentally, everything else. And when you start looking at what the costs are, it's a little scary. I've got one child left in college. And, you know, by 2022, tuition costs are supposed to be projected at $86,284. So the question is, are you saving for your children's education? And if you look at, you know, the next slide, which talks about people living longer and the cost of health care is going up every year. If you're looking at the average cost of a private nursing facility in the United States, it's going to be $77,745. That's a lot of money. So do you have the kinds of insurance that you might need for long-term care, either for yourself or for your parents? Are you maximizing your 401ks, your pensions, and your IRA options? If you don't know about it, that's what we're here for, to help you answer those questions. It's really important. It's one of the greatest ways to put money away and not completely pay taxes on it. How many of you are married in this room? Will you raise your hand? Okay. So the statistics are still what they are. 50% of all marriages in the United States end in divorce. It's a horrible thing to think about. I've been married to the same guy for 30 years because it would cost too much to get divorced. I'm kidding. I met him when I was 19 and he was 20, and guess what? I didn't know any better, and it just happens. But in divorce, what happens is everything in California gets split 50-50, right? So you have to think about that for a second. And if you happen to be the breadwinner, which more and more women are becoming in this day and age, particularly down here in the Valley, you know, with dual incomes, and sometimes the women happen to be doing a little bit better than the men, you need to think about, what is it going to cost me? How am I protected? Do I have to pay him alimony? You know, what are the insurance? What are the Social Security costs? Do you have a family budget? You should have a family budget. That's one of the first places to start. And as you go forward, we are supposed to outlive the men. And it depends on the country and the circumstances, but it's an average of about 8 years. And the problem is that when women go through widowhood or divorce, they're not ready for it. So the best thing you can do is get ready before it happens. And I know you think, oh gosh, I'll have another day, I'll sit down and do it another period of time. People spend more time planning their vacations than they do thinking about their money, which is not a smart thing. Remember, I keep saying, don't be a vegetable, get active. The only freedom you really have is by saving your money and learning how to use it properly. Widowhood, I don't know, people have probably had family members pass away at some point here. You're a little younger, but when you get to a point when you're going through the mourning process, you do not think clearly. I always tell people, give yourself at least 6 months to go through that process, because it's a cycle. And it's a cycle that comes in waves. And people make a lot of mistakes when they're going through the grieving process. You have a lot of things you have to get together. So it's better to actually put a binder together and have all that information together in one place so you're organized. God forbid something happens to you and suddenly your husband or your children have to deal with the fact that you're no longer around being the main breadwinner or a breadwinner at all. You need to exercise that and see what it looks like and see what happens to it. I knew this would happen. Okay. I wasn't thinking I was going to have to do both these things. I feel like Ginger Rogers dancing backwards and having to talk at the same time. So one of the things that really important is to try to figure out what your life expectancy is. The tables a few years ago only went to about 80. Now at least they've stretched out the ability to about 95. So we can come up with some reasonable numbers. And then what about inflation? Of course, we haven't had inflation for a long time, but it's starting to come back. Janet Yellen did not raise interest rates or mention it. It looks like it's going to be pushed back a little bit. Treasuries came down today, but you know what we're looking at is 30 years of interest rates dropping. So nobody in this room really has had the experience of having real inflation come back and what that does to your purchasing power. And, you know, the other part of that inflation is the cost of food. It's also the cost of your medical care. And can you live comfortably with Social Security as you get older? The likely it is, maybe not. You know, unless everybody continues working until they're 72, that seems to be the magic number right now. Most people don't want to do that. So not be silly about how you're spending your money. I mean, if you think about the latte factor, how many of you like to go to Starbucks every day? Okay, come on. Be honest. There's three people in this room. Okay. We all have our addictions. Mine's caffeine, okay? So you think about what that costs you every day, what those little things are that start to add up. It gets a little scary. So one of the things you've got to do is to figure out what your lifestyle goals are, what it is you're saving for, why you're saving it. I know we're in a society where expediency is really important. The point of the matter is you're going to live a long time, and you're going to have money there for your retirement at some point. You want to make sure you've got an asset allocation that is stress tested. You have to ask people in this room what that means, but it means when you have a situation like 2007, 2008, what did that portfolio look like? We can calculate that. We've got the asset allocations to stress test portfolios. It's really important to go through that. Remember, you know, you want to make sure that if you are running a business that you've got dual parties. I'm working with a lawyer right now who didn't have that worked out. They went through a divorce, and the business practice is ending because they didn't plan for those exceptional occurrences. So some of the most important things when you're looking at what I call the golden rules of wealth accumulation, first off, develop a sound budget. I know nobody wants to do that, but it's really important. First, you save, then you spend. If you've got debt in your life, the best raise you can possibly give yourself, and that's at about 21% on the interest on your credit cards, is pay off your credit cards. Get rid of it. Make sure that you save at least 15% of your income every year. Diversify your holdings, just because one of the things that we've done for years is we go in and we talk to IBM and all these different companies. And people like their stock accumulation plans because they don't really think about it. They match. You get a discount sometimes. Make sure you don't have all your money with one company. I know that's not popular, but it's true because things happen to those companies. And people turn around and suddenly they've got 100% of their retirement money in one stock. I know it's chic right now because we're in the tech valley, and certainly the returns have been great. But don't get caught in that web. Make sure you exercise your options and diversify your portfolios. Make sure that you're using the retirement plan well. And if you don't understand it, talk to your retirement plan specialist at your company. Talk to other people in this room. Be aware of your taxes and fees. I'm doing, working on an article right now that talks about what happens right before taxes hit April 15th. And you'll have to pay attention because that'll be coming out. It has to do with behavior, particularly in the tech sector. Use your credit wisely. There's ways, there's advantages. Obviously, you know, mortgages, we still get the deduction. But there's other ways to use credit in a way that makes sense. And make sure that you don't get suckered into taking on too much debt. That's what happened before. Everybody knows that. So that's still fresh in your mind. But people are starting to do it again. Be careful of margin. Start early and think long term. I know that's not that interesting. One of the things that you have to do, though, is make sure you know what your key investment concepts are. And this is everything that we test this regularly when clients come in and they fill out questionnaires because that's part of our due diligence process. It's part of making sure that we act as fiduciaries. Understand what the investment objective is. Know what this time horizon is. And guess what? The time horizon will change. You know, so if something changes in your life, we need to know about it so that it becomes a living, breathing document. Make sure you're diversified. Make sure that you're being tax efficient. So it's not just capital gains, it's losses. It's also being sure that you've got the money around to pay the taxes when the time comes. Be aware of your dividends. Be careful of cocktail tips. How many people have had that go wrong? It's not a good idea. You know what? Your best friend may be working at a company. If they are giving you information, they could go to jail. And, you know, if they're giving you information and it's wrong, they won't be your best friend anymore. Try to think about when to sell, but not necessarily what the price is going to be, but be consistent in how you're selling the stock if it's a company kind. And, of course, it's time in the market, not timing the market. Old adage. I love this because we put Thelma and Louise in here. It was Jim and Joe, and I said, you know, we're talking in front of all these women, and it's not appropriate. So, fortunately, Thelma begins investing at a very young age, about the age of 25. And Louise, of course, waits until she's 40 because she's having way too much fun. And what happens is you never can catch up with the compounding effect. So as much as you can put away, you need to start thinking about it. And you also need to make sure that you, again, are the center of the universe. I know that's really hard because women generally think about everybody else before themselves. But remember, you've got to put your oxygen on first. These are all the different things that you can possibly invest in. I'm not going to go through all this because we've got Q&A coming. Here's a 5% interest. When's the last time we saw 5% interest? It's a while ago. We used to have 5% tax-free in municipal bonds about 7 years ago. We're now at about 3% on 30-year paper. So, you know, that obviously needs to be changed, but maybe we'll get back up there if we're not careful on how fast we raise interest rates. So you can buy two fast food meals or one movie ticket and a candy bar and save $7 this week. You can also buy two small cheese pizzas or one large pepperoni pizza. I didn't write this. Delivered or one new CD to save $14 this week. The question really is, what are you willing to give up to achieve your financial goals? The latte? No! Okay, and this is one of my hot buttons. I've had married couples come into my office that don't have wills and they have children. I won't let them leave the office, okay? You could get run over by a Mack truck and your children can end up being wards of the county that you live in. You don't want to go through that. It can take 6 months to get your children back. Make sure you have a health care proxy, a living health directive. Living trusts in California are really important. They're, you know, you've got your will and your trust directs where the money goes. It also keeps it a little more private. And then you have estate strategies, your trusts and trustees. If something happens to you, who's going to step in and fill the void? Is it your aging parents? Not necessarily. They may not be able to. And then know how your businesses are going to be distributed to. Who's going to own it ultimately if something happens? So there's a backup plan. You need that backup plan. And then, of course, the most important thing, too, after you've made all this money, what are you going to do with it? Are you going to spoil your children rotten? Hopefully not. Are you going to make sure that you've left some kind of a legacy and that your children understand it? That's part of the training and benefits also. And, of course, the estate side right now is $5 million. It's split in two. Tax bill at that point is zero. It may change. You never know. But that's what it is right now. And estate sizes are going to vary depending on, you know, family, real estate, et cetera. So one of the things that I want to just talk about, if it comes up on the screen, is the process that we go through when we're talking to people. And that may not happen, but I can explain it to you since it seems to be stuck. I was wondering when that was going to happen. The first and foremost important thing is to analyze what your actual needs are. And that's a one-on-one discussion. The second is making sure that what we do makes sense and it's tailored to your needs. It's very specific. It's not a cookie-cutter approach. And then making sure that the choices are actually carried out and that there's an ongoing commitment in understanding you and your family and the dynamics in it. So I just want to end with one little thing, and then we'll do some Q&A. I mentioned Janine Dewar. We don't even have our last slide. I'm bummed. Earlier, if anybody went to that, said that body language and human behavior are really important things. And there we go. That's great. Those are the disclosures. And this is how I wanted to end it. And I thought it was sort of pithy because, you know, they were talking about body language and that the most important thing is to embrace your freedom. So, ladies, please embrace your freedom. We're going to have some Q&A right now. Thank you for listening. Okay, I'm going to have all the ladies introduce themselves. I'm going to keep that slide up if I don't hit it again. So we've got who's brave enough to come ask questions?
Introduce first.
This is not a shy group. Thank you.
Are we going to start with our bios, Tia?
Yeah, why don't we each introduce ourselves? I apologize. That would help.
Sorry, so you know who you're asking questions to. I'll start over here, I guess, just because I'm already talking. I do that. I have 10 brothers and sisters, so it's one of those situations where I was brought up in a family where you had to get your word in. Sorry, Tia. My name is Cheryl Young. I'm a managing director at Morgan Stanley, senior portfolio management director. My specialty is on option strategies. And it's interesting because I was thinking about this when Brianne Brown was talking. I thought her talk was just amazing about who am I in my bio. I'm not just the geeky number crunching portfolio manager, which I am that, but I'm also the daughter of divorced parents. And with 10 brothers and sisters, I completely understand fear and how money has a lot to do with emotional impact on women especially. So I'm also a huge advocate for women's literacy around finances. I'm on 4 boards, including the Chicago Board of Options Exchange on their advisory council for education on options. And empowering women is very important to me. We've talked a lot today about glass ceilings. One thing I found out about glass in my lifetime is there are hammers. And guess what you can do to glass with a hammer? So I'm all about giving women tools and giving them hammers so they can understand how to break their own glass ceilings and become more financially literate.
Hi, my name is Alma Gimmerin, and I'm an executive director at Morgan Stanley and a family wealth director. I'm originally from the Netherlands, but I grew up in Japan, and that's where I learned English. So I look, you know, not like I did, but I did. And I came to the U.S. and studied economics. Because I was an immigrant, I was extremely interested in financial literacy and learning everything there was about money. I felt that money equals power, and knowledge about money equals power. I think that money is a great equalizer, and I really aim to, I studied, I got a CFP license, I have a CMA license, I have a CPM license, I mean, more licenses than I know what to do with. I think it comes up from being a woman. We always think if we learn more, we could be equals. And I think it really helped me personally to give great financial advice to my clients, but also to feel confident in the financial arena. And I think as women, if we can feel confident about finances, we can feel equal. And that really starts through education and knowledge. And so I just feel that that is a very big equalizer, and I try to empower all my clients to really understand what money can do for them and what it can do for their families.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Pam Soplin, and I am a CFP and a first vice president here at Morgan Stanley. I've been here 9 years, and this is actually my second career. I was in at Hewlett-Packard in supply chain for 23 years, and it's very interesting. Hillary's talk, she was saying that in the 80s, there were actually some strides made in terms of women and our ability to grow in those corporations at that time. And I felt like I had a lot of opportunities there, and I did grow very well in that environment. Coming to the financial world, a totally different situation, and I was absolutely shocked at that, just coming out of high tech and into finance. So I've really tried to grow my business by supporting women, empowering women, and educating them. I've kind of in the last couple of years become default expert for the widows in the area because several my clients have passed away. And so this whole process of helping these women in their 70s or so get a hold of their finances and understand it, the generation just really wasn't very empowered in that area. And so I've really been kind of excited to help and educate in that area. So I'm really trying to grow my practice there.
So let's
questions?
Start with your first question.
Okay. About 10 years ago, I did an evaluation and determined that my long-term care policy was a ripoff and that I just should lose it and do smart investing to fund my own elder care. That was 10 years ago. I'm getting a little closer to elder. And I want to evaluate whether that's still the right choice to go a long-term care policy in favor of doing my own thing.
Well, it's changed a lot. I mean, recently, we can all answer this, but recently there's some insurance policies now that actually make more sense than they used to. They've actually got some life insurance benefit connected to it. So if you don't use it, you happen to be one of those lucky 90-year-olds that's not in a retirement situation or using the health, it actually comes back to the estate.
I have a lot of experience with long-term care, and one of the things that I find is it's very difficult to quantify, is this a good deal or is it a bad deal financially? And I think, obviously, it's just, if you needed long-term care, it was a great idea to have bought long-term care. And if you didn't need it, it was not a good idea. Like Theo says, there are some policies now that are a hybrid. But I want to give you an example of my own mother and where I think long-term care was so important. She, in her later years, had a boyfriend who was 10 years older than her. And when she was in her 70s and she started with this boyfriend, I'm like, oh my God, you know, you're going to be taking care of
him. At least he wasn't 10 years younger, right?
Yeah, no, he was 10 years older. And then what happened was when they needed assistance, because they didn't have long-term care, even though they had enough money, they would say things like, I'm not going to spend $50 a day just to get dressed. Or I'm not going to spend $100 a day just to take a shower. And all of this burden came on to my mother, who then became extremely overworked because she was taking care of him. Yet if she had spent, or they had spent, the same money that they would have spent, they would have viewed that money in a different pocket. And even though at the end of the day it might have been the exact same dollars, they would have been more free to spend it because they would have viewed it as free money.
I want to just point out one more thing into that. I had a client who was applying to nursing homes fairly recently, and I went to several homes with them. So I had gone to several of the homes with my client to look at the different facilities, and we were running the cost analysis, and of course we're geeking out on the numbers. But to Alma's point, one thing that came up was one of the homes said, the fact that you have a long-term care policy, we know that the kids who are often holding the purse strings are not arguing
yes.
over the quality of care. They're yes. not saying, you know what, Dad can share a room or Mom can share a room. They're, you know, they don't know what's going on anyways. They have dementia. And they were more willing to take someone who had a policy than someone who had assets, even if the assets were substantial, because they knew they were going to get paid and they were going to get nickel and dimed. So it was really interesting hearing that from some of the directors at the actual nursing home facilities.
Hi, my name is Michonne. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect. So I have a question about mortgages. I'm looking at, let's say, a less than 3% or 4% mortgage with a 7-year ARM on my home. Should I pay off my mortgage, take my bonuses and all this extra cash I have and pay off the pay off my mortgage, or should I keep putting it into a savings plan or what I call an FU fund if I decide I don't want to stay with my job? So any advice there? Because I saw that you mentioned saving 15% of your income a year, and my strategy has been pay off all my debt as quickly as possible. So I paid off all my student loans and all this other stuff. So the last thing I have on my plate is my mortgage.
Oxygen first. You're doing the right thing. You want to answer this one?
Yeah, no, you are doing the right thing, especially those student loans and things that are high, you know, that are high interest rate. You really need to look at the interest rate that you're paying, of course, and the interest rate's historically low right now. Sometimes having that type of debt is not necessarily a bad thing. Of course, as everyone will tell you too, there's some write-offs that you're going to get. So as you increase in your pay and your salary, having some of that write-off is not necessarily a bad thing.
And that's the one thing that I'm just doing my taxes last week, and I realized that the only reason I'm not paying more taxes is because I have that the real estate tax and then the interest on my loan. I'm like, crap, if I pay this thing off, I'm no longer going to have that, and then I'm going to get married and take on his burdens and all this other stuff. So thank you.
Yes. Great.
I was just going to add to that, one of the things I tell clients that have a dilemma like that are also when they exercise stock options and they'll say, what should I do with this money? I always say take part of the money, maybe a third, to pay off your mortgage, and two-thirds goes into a special savings account. And you can call it like your mortgage account. And so then you can sort of look at it every single year, and if that interest rate that you're earning on that account is greater than the interest you're paying on your mortgage account, then you can feel comfortable like, okay, my mortgage is not getting paid off. Even if you do an interest-only product, my mortgage isn't getting paid off, but my savings account that is related to that mortgage in your head is getting bigger and bigger.
I think you also have to ask yourself about stress and risk. I have clients who, when the markets invariably go down because markets move through cycles, will sell stocks when they dip. If they had a big mortgage, they're not sleeping at night. If you could ride through the stock market, there's never been a better compounder of wealth. And if you had looked at 2007 and bought at the absolute worst day in 2007, which was October 12th, by the way, and ridden it out till now, you would have made, stripping out the dividends, 38% on the S&P 500. Adding the dividends back in, you would have made over 50% returns. So you would have been better off after going through the worst market correction in 2008 than you would have paying off mortgages at 3 or 4%, or staying in cash, or staying in bonds. But how many people could stay in the markets in 2008? We know few, because cash was at an all-time peak in March 2009 when the markets were at the bottom. So it comes down to a behavioral finance question for me as well, and you have to know who you are.
Yeah, it's how well do you sleep at night?
Hi.
We can hear.
Okay, but it's on. Okay, great. My name is Elizabeth. I am that 40, just about to be 41-year-old woman who literally has this much saved and no retirement account and nothing. The story is interesting, but I won't bore you with the details. That's where I am now. And I make over $100,000 a year. I have a lot of job security. I have minimal living expenses. And I have about $8,000 left in debt that I've been aggressively paying off for the last 5, 6, 7 years. So where do I start? You know, I can put away $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year. Seriously. So where do I start when I have that kind of all of a sudden liquidity and nothing? I haven't started anywhere yet.
Maximize it. You know, it does boil down to, you know, your individual level of what you can live with. I'm sorry, Lina. You want to maximize as much as you can possibly put away. We're legally not supposed to give tax advice, but you don't have to be too smart a mathematician to understand, you know, that the taxes, like I'm sure, yeah, the taxes are going to eat in at a certain level. So you want to make sure that you're at your company.
Maybe you can turn your lapel mic off and just talk into the...
Do you turn it off? No. Okay, I'll hold it here, which is better. You want to maximize what you can put away in your 401k and everything at work. And
where
your taxes.
Say, you're working at a large company that has a 401k?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I'm not. So I don't have anything set up for me. Like, whatever I do, I get to choose it, or I want help to choose it. But I'm reaching that point where I can actually start doing this. Up until now, it's just been pay off the debt, you know, get beyond the divorce, whatever.
Right.
So
I think that lends itself to financial literacy and learning as much as you can about managing money. And so I would just even buy a book which talks about money management 101. What are some of the first things that you could do? Obviously, or maybe not, but you could do a Roth IRA account or an IRA account. Or if you're self-employed, you could start a self-employment IRA account.
Okay. Yeah, I'm somewhat familiar with all the options, but there's still, I get conflicting advice on, oh, do this, do that. So anyway, but education is what I'm hearing.
You need to
say.
Do a real financial plan.
You need a financial advisor.
Yeah, I do.
We know it's you in the room, by the way.
Good to see
you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We can help.
Hi, my name is Tammy. I'm a 55-year-old woman married to a 57-year-old man for 34 years. We've done our savings. We have a nice portfolio. We live actually in the Midwest, not in California. But I work for Oracle, so I got the privilege of coming out for this conference. He's interested in retiring. I'm interested in him not retiring. What's your thoughts on early retirement? Our healthy portfolio is healthy, but, you know, retiring at 58 or 59 means, you know, 30. He's a healthy man. He's thin, exercises, you know, robust, all that.
So. I'm writing a book about this matter, so I'm going to take this and if that's okay, because this is just something I'm very passionate about. I'm writing a book about exit strategies for corporate executives. And one of the things that I have seen from a personal view of working with several clients and some of the biggest execs in Silicon Valley is that you have to have something to retire to, not from. And that is the biggest piece of advice I would give him. If he does not know what he wants to do, no amount of money is going to make him happy. So the portfolio is less of an impact for him if he doesn't know what that is. And if he retires without knowing that, he's going to be unhappy, especially men in this country. Most of their ego comes from their identity through work, and he has to figure that out. Once he knows that, then you can take a future value calculation of the numbers in order to figure out what the income stream needs to be to support that. But he should never quit, especially when he had lived for 40 more years without knowing what that is.
Yeah. Can I quote you?
Yes.
Besides that,
I'll give you my card. He can blame me.
Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Elena, and I try to educate myself on whole life insurance, too. So I think I'm still a bit lost, so I don't know whether to consider it as an investment tool or retirement tool. I would like you to give, you know, a quick overview of pros and cons compared to 401k, for instance, and I guess what I'm interested in, who benefits from investing in whole life insurance the most. Thank you.
So you want to know the pros and cons of a whole life versus a 401k plan?
Yes, and who would benefit the most, I guess.
Who benefits the most?
So when you think about a whole life insurance policy, you're buying insurance, but you're also buying savings components together with the insurance. One of the the advantages of a 401k plan is that it's automatic and it comes out of your paycheck, and so you might be more disciplined to put money in. The other thing about a whole life policy is if you don't have the money on a consistent basis, or let's say for 6, 7, 8 years to contribute to it, you might decide after year 3 or 4 to terminate making contributions or to cash it in, and the surrender charges are pretty heavy.
Really?
So I definitely would recommend that you take advantage of your corporate benefits. And of course, you want to have some life insurance, but when you're younger, it might be cheaper to buy, term insurance first, maximize your benefits before buying a whole life policy.
Hi, my name's Jing, and just listening to the presentation and all the questions, I realized there's a lot of minor nuances to finance, and probably I wouldn't be able to learn all of it. So I'm looking for a financial advisor, and I'm wondering if are there a financial advisory service that's catered towards not like the millionaires, but more of the middle class income family, as well as what are some of the characteristics that I should be looking for when I'm looking for a good financial advisor?
That is such a great question. I'm glad you asked it, because all of us are different, and all of us have very different practices. And so when you're talking to a financial advisor or interviewing one, I mean, I don't know how you would find someone without maybe a referral. That's probably your best start, because you are dealing with someone you have to really be able to trust or working with your money. The number one questions, I tell people the 5 questions you should ask me are, do you have a designation? Are you a CFP? Some of the other women talked about that, for example. CFP is the most widely recognized, but there's other designations, and just understanding what their designation means. I think it's very important to ask what kind of clients they work with. If you are going to be the smallest client in an advisory group, you may not get the best services out of that advisor, to be frank. You need to understand fees. How are they getting paid? Are there conflicts of interest? Are there hidden fees? So that's a very important question to ask a financial advisor. And what kinds of investments are they recommending? Are they getting paid more because they're recommending product versus getting paid to give you advice?
Certifications.
Certified Financial Plan. If you went to the CFP website, it'll talk a lot about different designations. But some designations can be a one-day class. So seeing letters behind someone's name doesn't mean a whole lot. The reason the CFP is very widely recognized in our industry is it's a 2-year study program. It does have a board. It has an ethics review committee. So you actually have to pass a board just like you would for a CPA exam. And it's a 2-day exam, very difficult. And I take great pride in that, because there's also an ethical component in that if I did something that was not right for people, they could revoke my CFP. And there's a continuing education component as well to the CFP. But, for example, I have my CFP, I have my CHFC, I have my CPM, as does some of the other women here. You want someone who's got a high level of education and integrity.
You also want to look at their U4. Which is on the line. If there's any complaints on somebody's record, it actually shows up. You can look online to see how ethical they are. I mean, it's right out there in the public domain.
Hi, my name's Mansi. I have a couple of questions for you. They're kind of in 2 parts. The first thing I'm wondering is, I'm young. I entered the workforce as a full-time employee 8 months ago, and I don't have many financial obligations right now, so I feel like I have a lot of opportunity to make impactful decisions now. So I was wondering if you have advice on what I should do. One thing my dad had me set up 12 years ago was my Roth IRA. So I have that going. I started investing in a 401k. But even though I'm kind of financially literate, I don't know how to make really impactful, smart choices. So that's my first question, if you have recommendations there. And my second question is, are there ways to invest to get, or do you have recommended ways to make short-term fast growth for not so much of the long impact, but if I want to make $5,000 in a year and then invest that somewhere else versus long-term investments?
Yeah, who's going to answer that one?
I got just a stock for you.
So let me just start. I'll start by just answering your first one, or just giving some thoughts on it, is that you know, you are doing all the right things. You know, maximizing your 401k. Wrong spot.
I'm just
all right.
Standing.
Maximizing 401k, putting money away. You know, you look like, it sounds like you're doing all the right things. So you want to go back to, I think, one of the things that Theo said in the presentation is looking at what are your goals and objectives and really writing those down and really thinking about them. And if you have, you know, a partner, a significant other, talking about those and making your financial goals a real, something that you talk about and think about and check back with yourself all the time. I think so often what happens is we start in our 20s and we just sock our money away in the 401k or, you know, whatever. We don't think about it so much. But if you really think about it and say, what's my next thing? I want to buy a house or a car, or I want to take a vacation, or, you know, I want to help my parents or whatever it is, but write it down and work towards a goal. I think it just makes a lot of difference.
Writing
it down. Second question on the quick 5,000.
Oh gosh, we don't answer that question actually, because you know it's like saying, you know, I want to gamble on my returns, and yeah. We just don't do that.
Okay.
I mean, it's not thoughtful. It's not a process that we do. You know, there's things that you can do with reinvestment with the money to, you know, take advantage of that. But I would say there's nobody here that would tell you to bet on the come.
Yeah, you have a 50-50 chance making money in a broadly diversified stock portfolio in any given 1 year period. If you go out 3 years, that chance goes up to about 93%. If you go out to 5 years, it goes to like 97%. So with stock investments, it's not short term. I mean, how do you know if you're going to pick Facebook or Google or, you know what I mean? It's not short term. You might as well go to Vegas.
Yeah. But
I don't want to do that.
Your odds are about 1%.
And then 95% of your returns really depend on your asset allocation. So it's not just, you know, time in the market, it's making sure that you do a good job when you're actually putting the portfolios together and understanding that. So it's a process, and all of this is a process. It's like learning German. You've walked into a classroom and you're like, you're getting it. Your father should be applauded for getting you started on a Roth.
Yeah,
kiss him.
Awesome.
I mean, that like is the most important thing. I did that with my kids immediately also, and it makes a huge difference later on.
Thank you.
One thing I've noticed on 401ks is people don't always go in and make sure they're actually asset allocating something.
Yes.
And they're just dumping cash in, and they don't realize that they haven't actually done anything in the 401k. So please make sure that you go look and make sure that you actually are putting it into, choose where it's going to go, because there's an amazing amount of people that it ends up in cash and they don't realize it. So
great point.
Good point.
Hi, my name's Kristen. Question for you. If you're working at a company, you're maximizing your 401k to minimize your tax obligations. Not that anybody would do that, but if you're maximizing your 401k, are there other opportunities such as an external IRA or a self-directed IRA that you can also contribute to? And if so, is there an income ceiling to where that eliminates that as an opportunity?
Yeah, there is. I mean, depending on, you know, if you're married or not married, if you're self-employed or you have a side business, depending on your age and also your tax bracket. I mean, every year it goes up a little bit higher, which is nice because you can save more money. But you're also paying more in taxes.
So what is it today?
Are you married? I shouldn't ask that
question. Yes, I am.
So
it's about $168,000, I think, roughly, if you're married. If you're single, it's about $110,000, $115,000, somewhere around there. I will say this, though. You know, I hear so many people talk about maximizing their 401ks, and most of my clients are in very high tax brackets, and that is probably the first place to start. But I've also seen a number of clients end up at retirement with nothing else saved outside of their IRAs or 401ks. And the problem with that is then there's no ability to control taxes once you're retired. I have a client next year that turns 70 and a half, and his required minimum distributions out of his 401k is over $250,000 a year. Mm-hmm. That puts him solidly at a 33% tax bracket for the rest of his life, and nothing he can do about it. If he had diversified his options early on and saved in other avenues, he could have had some more control over his taxes. So again, I think it's really important to understand your plan and understand, are you going to be at a higher tax bracket later or now? You know, a lot of my clients, I tell them, well, their kids are young and, you know, lower tax brackets. Get them to do Roth IRAs. Get them to do something that is going to come out tax-free at retirement. Don't just do 401ks and IRAs. It's great, but again, you need to look at the overall big picture in your taxes.
What about a self-directed IRA?
So the limit this year, depending on how old you are, if you're over 50, you can do a catch-up contribution. So the limit is $5,500 or $6,500 if you're over 50. And you can still do last year's IRA contribution up until April 15th.
But I think the other thing that you said about the 401k benefits at work, if you're maximizing that, you might also want to look at maximizing your other benefits. Yeah. I think so often clients will come in and they have not taken advantage of their company's benefits. As an example, the ESPP plan, it's really important to understand how to work that. And the other plan is your health and dependent savings account. Many people don't know how to use that effectively. So you want to look at all the other benefits. And to Cheryl's point, as you might also want to consider splitting your 401k contribution to a Roth 401k and a regular 401k. And it's kind of a detailed answer as to why, but it's something to look at if your company offers you that.
Thank you.
My question is about saving for children. So I have a 15-month-old son.
Oh.
And, yes, it's very hard to be away from him right now. So I'm wondering, we're sort of choosing between, like, a 529 plan, and then my financial advisor, who's also with Morgan Stanley in the Sacramento office, he's done a great job with my portfolio, also mentioned something about custodial accounts. Can you just sort of explain the benefit of having a custodial account and whether it's good? And we didn't get a chance to, like, go into it in great detail, or else I would have asked him, but since you're here, and I'm sure other people would like to hear about that, the benefits of a custodial account, and then does it make sense to do both, the 529 and the custodial account?
So just on the custodial plans, they're not as popular as they used to be. They changed from a maturing age of 18 to 21. There were some issues because that money goes straight to the child afterwards. Depending on the size of the account and how much you're going to be giving into it every year will make a difference. With a 529, it's the same thing. You want to maximize that to a point and make sure if you've got other children it gets used up over time. Then people seem to forget about gifting. All right, so you can gift, you know, $14,000 a year to your child in a trust and have more use of that money so that maybe potentially at some point it's used for purchase of a house or something else. So there's a lot of, depends again on how much you want to give away every year. And so be careful with the custodial accounts because there's been some issues also with that.
I use them for every client who's saving for college, and I'll tell you why, just to push. And again, see, everyone's different. No, that's what's great about this business. So I have three children. College is important. I graduated high school at 6, and my parents said, bye-bye, have a nice life. And paying for college myself was very difficult. So I don't want my kids having to work, you know, crazy odd jobs that I had to work, you know, to get through their lives. So where would I use a custodial account? Where would I use a 529 plan? If I have a client who has an ESPP program, do their work, and they get a 15% discount, they're going to sign up for it all day long. We wait the 18 months for it to become a long-term capital gain. I'm not a CPA. There's my disclaimer for my compliance guy. And then we give the stock to their UTMA. They can sell it in their custodial account at their tax bracket versus at the parents' tax bracket. That's where I love these custodial accounts. In California, this is not necessarily a widely known fact, there's no place on the application. You can write on there, restrict till age 25. Now, if you're from a different state, every state has its own rules around their UTMAs or custodial accounts. But in California, we can restrict them as late as 25. We're hoping by 25 the kids finish college, mature. But the advantages are less of a fee drag. 529 plans are very expensive. 529 plans, a lot of people don't know this, you can rebalance twice a year. So you have very little ability to do a lot with investments. Just like your 401k, you probably have 10 or 12 mutual funds. There's no ability to do individual stock. My kids, I give them stock every year. We talk about what the stock's going to be. The year I gave McDonald's, they all voted to sell it. I was so proud. I'm using it as a teaching tool for my boys to understand money. So I think it's great to have both, but I can also use it for a wedding, a car, high school, 529s, college and college only. So there's pros and cons on both, but again, you need to understand and really get into what's your tax situation, what's your goal for the money, who are your kids, are they responsible? If you have a kid who's 17 on drugs, you probably don't want to set up an UTMA for them.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I've had experience where kids have turned, you have to write down 25 on the front of it, otherwise it falls to the 21-year age. Most kids are not responsible to suddenly be given a large sum of money at that age. And having grown up with a lot of trust fund children, I can tell you 90% of them didn't do much with their life. So, you know, it depends on your child completely.
Well, hopefully he'll be very responsible.
Yeah.
I know. He's a baby.
More questions. Are we good? Yeah, so we're around privately. And
we're going to be around if you have any other questions that you don't want
to
ask.
Just real quick, can the other Morgan Stanley advisors stand up? Because
yes,
I just want to recognize them that they're here.
They're here to help. Yep. Thank you, ladies.
So if you ladies have questions, you can ask any one of us here. We're here to help you. The other thing I will just say real quick, because a lot of you are from companies, encourage your companies to have a financial literacy program. I have taught at Apple, at Cisco, at Intel, at different companies. This is an area where it's intimidating and there's a lot of information. Get a free benefit through work. We're happy to help. If you want to talk to us about that, we can help with that as well. But get smart about your money.
Yep, and it's great having people come in, especially when you've got a 401k situation where the company won't necessarily tell you what to do. Thank you, ladies, for coming.